Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, you are listening to the Eastern Airlines Radio Talk Show, and this is our 71st radio broadcast. This evening, we are coming to you from Jacksonville, Florida, Martha's Vineyard here in Massachusetts, Delray Beach, Florida, Roaring Gap, North Carolina, and the Villages, that's up near Ocala, Florida. I'm Jim Hart, and I'm here in the beautiful island of Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts. We're an all-talk show tonight, and we are so fortunate to have a very special guest with us tonight. If you have something you want to ask our guest, we will certainly welcome your call. Let me tell you how to reach us. First, if you're listening to us live now, you've already discovered that you can tune into us. Second, if you would like to talk with us live on the show, just call us at 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Let me repeat those numbers. 213-816-1611 or toll-free at 877-572-1861. Now, once you've called into the program and you want to go live with us, then you need only to press number 1 on your telephone dial pad, and that will let us know that you're available for an on-the-air conversation. Our host for tonight's show comes back by popular demand, Mr. Ed Wiegel, president of Eastern Airlines. Let me preface this by saying this is not one of our make-believe skits like we've done in the past. This is the official representative of the new Eastern Airlines. In just a minute, we will say hello to Mr. Wiegel and eagerly anticipate all the news he's willing to impart. Remember, our call-in number is just given. I'll give them to you again just before we bring Mr. Wiegel on the air. Our hosts for tonight's show are Miss Jan Buskai in Delray Beach, Florida. You're there,
hi,
Jan,
Jim.
Right?
Hi, Jim.
Okay, hello, Chuck Albright in the Villages near Ocala, Florida.
How are you doing tonight?
Okay, Chuck. Hello, Steve Thompson up in cool Roaring Gap, North Carolina. What's your temperature tonight, Steve?
Oh, it's a nice, balmy 77 degrees. Beautiful skies.
Oh, beautiful. Hey, Bill Joseph, way out in Grand Junction, Colorado. Is it still in the 90s out there, Bill?
No, it hasn't, Jim. It's now in the hundreds.
Oh, no. Hello, Neil. Hello, Neil Holland in Jacksonville, Florida. How are things at the mothership?
We're underwater.
we're
getting a lot of that liquid stuff from Tropical Storm Debbie tonight.
Heavy.
So we've really had some heavy rainfall here.
We have some additional radio show information that we would like to pass on to you. If you did not hear the discussion on our last broadcast, Neil, can you tell us about our new sister show?
Yes, and thanks, Jim. If folks are interested in other airlines in addition to Eastern Airlines, I don't know why they would be, but we are happy to tell you about a new show broadcast every Sunday at 6:30 p.m. It's called the Airline Radio Talk Show, and you can hear it by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Neal, CAPTNEAL. And if you want to be on the show, just follow the same directions Jim gave out earlier on how to connect into the live broadcast with your call. Our first show that we did 2 weeks ago was Episode 1, which we featured National Airlines. And this past show, which we did yesterday evening, we featured Pan American. We'd like to do this show as primarily a call-in radio talk show, allowing the greater portion to callers with stories to share, news, historical accounts, interviews, and great sound effects about the airlines we feature in the show. The commercials are especially interesting. Sunday, June 25th, we did feature Pan American Part 1, because there's so much history with Pan American. And we may be doing a couple of series on Pan Am as we have so much good material about this world-serving airline.
Jim? Let me remind our listeners once again of our call-in phone numbers, 213-816-1611, or toll-free at 877-572-1861. And remember, to chat with our guest and host, just press number 1 on your dial pad. Give us a call. Number.
Why don't we cut for an advertisement from Eastern Airlines?
Okay, I'll see if I can get our producer to plug in commercial number 1. And it should be Eastern Airlines.
Ryan, look! There's a new kind of plane! That's Eastern's new Boeing 727 jet! Look how high the tail is! 34 feet! Look where they put the jets! In the tail assembly. That's one reason it's so quiet. The passengers are always riding ahead of the sound. Where does it fly to? I don't know.
It flies north. You can hightail it on Eastern's new 727 jetliner to Washington, Philadelphia, and Boston. And a unique new dining service is worth writing home about. Choose from a selection of superb entrees like lobster Newburgh, filet mignon with Bordelaise sauce, prepared as you like it. Eastern 727 Jet, quiet as a library. The smartest way to leave town? Come fly with Eastern.
Well,
Neil, I hear a lot of those number ones being rung in here. Have you got Mr. Weagle on the line?
No, we haven't found Mr. Weagle yet, but hopefully
we'll
be on the line.
Hello, this is Vito Borelli. Hello.
Hey, Vito, how are you? Good to hear from you.
Okay, Jim, how are you?
Okay, and that's 305. You're in area code 305, aren't you, Vito?
No, I'm 954.
Okay, I see 305. We're going to cut right now, folks, that are online. Our call-in line is just full of callers for Ed. Ed, you're on area code 305. Are you with us this evening?
Yeah, Neil, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, loud and clear. Good
Great.
To have you with us.
No, it's,
Hi, Ed,
it's,
this is Bill Joseph out in Colorado.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. It's now time to welcome you to our show. We all want to say thanks for what you and your team are in the process of doing, giving a rebirth of Eastern Airlines. Can we start off by telling the listeners tonight about your background and why you want to put Eastern back in the air?
Sure. Well, let me first say I understand Vito Borelli is on the line with us. I just want to say a few words. Vito has been extremely helpful and supportive of our efforts down here in Miami over the last 18 months or so. As you know, Vito runs is now president of the Retirees Association here, and has really done a great service for us in getting us into the community and having us meet some people and providing us with some support. And Vito, I just want to say thank you for everything that you've done.
You're welcome, I'm sure.
Tremendous support. Yeah, let me talk a little bit about the whole project for those who didn't listen last time or want to be brought up to speed. The and I'll give you a little background on the activities of the bankruptcy estate from 1991. If you can believe it, it's been 21 years up until today. As you know, Eastern shut down after the bankruptcy in January of 1991, and actually was a fairly active bankruptcy estate for a number of years. Obviously, there were a lot of claims that had to be settled and lots of different legal activities, but as well, Eastern had been very, very active in a number of fronts on the technology side, and had invested in a number of new technologies that it was going to use really on the front end of cutting edge of ticket distribution, and actually Eastern had invested in and used some internal resources to create what really was one of the first what we call online travel agencies, and they had developed that and ended up selling that off in about 2000, 2001. They continued to develop it and sold that off as at a profit, for instance. But as you remember, also Eastern was involved in the relaunch of Pan Am, which occurred in 1995, 1996, and then a little bit into 1997. And Eastern provided some aircraft and some other support to that. A lot of the reasons for that were for tax reasons and other reasons that had to do with the way the financial structure of the estate was set up. But the estate really, in 2003, had sold off all of the assets. All of the physical assets had pretty much settled all of the claims that went back and forth. And was left with really what was the intangible asset, or we call the intellectual property, which is the Eastern name, the trademarks, the logos, the hockey stick logo, even some of the older logos that go back into the 50s and so forth, the Ionosphere Club trademark, some of the other names which were quite interesting that Eastern had. SkyPass, for instance, was an Eastern trademark, which was preserved by the bankruptcy estate through the entire time that Eastern was in bankruptcy. So in 2003, the current or the then liquidating trustee, John Sicilian, stepped down since all that was left at that point was the intellectual property. And that was put into a trust, and an administrator was put into place. And I had known John over the years. Had actually talked to him in the mid-90s about doing something with the name and bringing it back and starting an airline around it. And the time wasn't right, and there were some other issues going on, and the estate was focused on other things. And so those plans never came to fruition. But in about 2004, 2005, the estate got back in touch with me, because I had been in touch with them over the years, and asked if I could put together a plan to relaunch the airline. And we did that over the course of several years, went back and looked at all of the attributes that made Eastern a great airline, looked at the things that Eastern had done over the years, and the equity that had been built up into the name, and where that equity resided in terms of the marketing side, the sales side, where it had operated to and from, and where the name recognition of the name and the positives around the name were the strongest. And we also looked at, as I mentioned on the last show, looked very deeply at all of the startup airlines that had started since deregulation. This goes back to the Deregulation Act of 1978, when you had a number of airlines start, most famous of which in Eastern's time was People Express, and there were a number of airlines after that. In fact, there were well over 100 airlines that started from 1978 on up until the early 2000s, all but three or four of which failed. So we went back and looked at each one of those examples, each one of those situations, and looked at what they did right, what they did wrong, what lessons could be learned from each of those situations so that we could take those lessons and put them into the new plan that would incorporate the Eastern name as well, all of the things that had been learned about airlines and how airlines can survive and prosper that had been learned since the deregulation of 1978. So that took a bit of time to look at all of that and also to work out a transaction with the estate where we could acquire the intellectual property, ensure that the estate got full value for what was the equity in the names and the trademarks and the logos and so forth, and ensure that all of that was done on an equitable basis for the estate. So we took some time to really look at all of the aspects of that and look at the current aircraft availability and the ability to attract the investment and the current economic environment, all the macroeconomic factors that one has to look at, whether you're starting an airline or a chemical company or what, and started to develop the plan, I would say, really in full force around 2008, about the time of the world financial meltdown. So that gave us a little bit of breathing room, actually, to look at all that, and you know, before we went out to talk to investors, as the world was sorting itself out, so to speak. And so we put together that plan, and really within the last 18 months, that plan has really come together with all of the elements involved that we think are necessary for the new Eastern to be able to launch, both on the attributes of what we call the legacy carrier, the Eastern Airlines legacy, as well as combining that with the advantages of being a new entrant, low-cost carrier. So we've got the benefits of sort of both worlds. We've got the legacy carrier value in terms of the name recognition and the equity that had been built up, the goodwill, so to speak, among the traveling public, and the recognition of the value of the name in the cities and the countries that we wish to serve, as well had the advantage of being able to come in with one fleet type, lower cost in terms of operation because of a much simplified operation, and along with all of the other elements that you get with a startup carrier. And so we've developed what we thought was and is a sort of hybrid model that bridges the low cost world, where you've got very low costs of operation, lower level of service, and the legacy carrier world, where you've got a higher level of service and better recognition of the brand name. And on top of that, we also looked at where we thought the airline business was going to be 10 years from now, because much of our planning and thinking was on the basis that we wanted to position the new Eastern in such a way that we could take advantage of all of the elements that we saw impacting the business over the next 10 years, forecast or predict where we thought the business would be 10 years from now, and design the airline today so that it could take advantage of those elements and, in effect, move that timeline forward so that we became really the cutting edge in terms of airline thinking and planning and innovation would allow us, one, to attract the investment, and two, to ensure not only that we would survive, but that we would be profitable and that we would become part of the larger family of airlines, and Eastern would take its place, its rightful place again, amongst the list of airlines in the U.S. that were considered successful. So we also, and So let me go back and talk about where we think the airline business will be 10 years from now. As you know, the world airline business is really divided into three parts. There you've got the three alliances. One world with led by American. You've got SkyTeam, which is led by Delta and Air France. And you've got Star, which is led by United and Lufthansa. And each of those alliances obviously has their affiliates in Latin America and Asia and Africa and the Middle East and so forth. And we see, as we looked out 10 years and saw actually what's been going on for the past 10 years and then what we think will go on for the next 10 years, is the fact that the vast bulk of the airline business in terms of tickets sold or revenues generated will be generated through one of the alliances, and that well over 90% of all tickets sold, all revenue that's generated will be as part of one of the alliances. And by that I mean that an airline that you fly will be a member of one of those alliances, and that will give you or the traveling public the benefits of all online connections, being able to ticket through all the way to your final destination, whether you're on two or three airlines, being able to check your bags through, being able to use the VIP or business class, first class lounges of the affiliate airlines in the alliance, being able to redeem and accumulate miles in other programs that are part of that alliance, and effectively capture the traffic of that customer, that passenger, whether it be a business passenger or a leisure passenger, because of the power of the alliance. And we looked at the alliances, and we realized that even those airlines that had for years said, we are not going to be part of an alliance, we don't need to be part of an alliance because of our name or our reputation or who is behind us, we don't need to be part of that alliance. Some of those airlines were starting to now say, hey, we need to be part of a bigger network in order to survive. And really the moment for us when we realized that was essentially the case was when even Richard Branson himself, who started Virgin Atlantic very much as a rogue or as an outlier, and said, you know, Virgin can operate and compete on its own. It doesn't need to be part of an alliance. It by virtue of its brand and the personality of the person behind it, it would be able to survive and prosper. Even Richard Branson, within the last few years, has said Virgin needs to be part of an alliance and needs to tap into the alliance network in order to survive. So one of the big elements of our plan was to become part of one of the alliances and effectively fill a need for that alliance in the areas that we operated. And so all of our planning and thinking that went behind the airline were structured on the fact that we wanted to ensure that all of the various systems within the airline, our maintenance systems, our distribution system for tickets, our technology for being able to buy a ticket online, being able to check in at a kiosk at the airport, being able to get all the way through to the front door of the airplane by doing everything electronically. All of those systems, flight control, flight planning, flight dispatch and following, all of those elements, all of that had to be such that we were aligned with the practices, the best practices of the major airlines. Because what we also saw typically happening is an airline would start and would design its systems and design all the elements of its operation sort of in a vacuum. And it would buy software and it would buy systems and it would buy the other pieces that it needed in order to function as if it was a standalone airline. And there are software vendors and there are vendors to the airline business who sell systems specifically for low-cost standalone airlines. And what typically happens is 5 or 6 years into their existence, assuming that they have survived, they now decide that they want to be part of an alliance, and they talk to the alliance partners, and they quickly realize that their maintenance systems and the technology behind that don't match up with what the alliance requires in terms of ISO 9000 and some of the other standards. The ticketing and distribution is not robust enough so that it does not allow for code sharing and interlining and being able to send bags through between two airlines and all of those elements. So it took literally would take airlines as long as 3 to 4 years to revamp all of their systems so that they could effectively become part of an alliance or even co-chair. And not to digress, but take Southwest Airlines, for example. They have been trying for the last few years to come up with a reservation system that would allow them to co-chair and interline with other airlines. They've spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to develop a reservation system that would allow them to co-chair with WestJet. Actually, going back to their acquisition of ATA, it failed because Southwest's reservation systems and other systems didn't match up with ATA's. And quite interestingly, I think the listeners would get a kick out of this, but all of the ads that Southwest Airlines runs on TV, where they loudly proclaim that they don't charge baggage fees. The primary reason they don't charge baggage fees is because their reservation system and their systems are not set up to allow them to charge for a bag. And it's going to take them several years to change that. Southwest, as you know, bought AirTran. AirTran charges for bags. And Southwest left the charging for bags policy in place at AirTran because AirTran's system would allow for that. And Southwest is trying to figure out if there's a way that they could take AirTran system and move it over so that they could charge for bags. But just as an aside, every time you see one of these commercials in which they loudly proclaim that they don't charge for bags, just realize the primary reason is because their system won't allow them to. But my point was that what we wanted to do was design the airline so that it leaped ahead of where airlines typically are in the process of starting and ensure that the systems and the programs that were in place in each functioning department were robust enough that we would essentially look like a legacy carrier in terms of our ability to work with other airlines. And so there was a tremendous amount of planning that had to go into that, actually, which slowed us up, but actually will save us time in the long run because of what we've put in place. So just to jump ahead to where we are today, we've put all of that in place. We've put our alliances in place, subject to our financing. And we're now out finishing up the financing, which involved hiring several investment banks, meeting with literally hundreds of private equity investors and other funds to put the funding in place. And now we've fast forward a little bit more to tell you that since our last chat on the show, we have made an offer to acquire a small airline. That would give us, assuming that the transaction is completed, would give us the what we call the U.S. 121 operating certificate that allows us to operate as an air carrier, and that would, in very general terms, will save us about 6 to 9 months in our ability to move forward and put Eastern back in the air. So we're in the process of doing that. We're under confidentiality agreement, so I can't really discuss much more than that, other than to say that we have made the offer, it's been accepted, and we're now in the process of trying to close that deal, which will give us, as I said, the 121 operating certificate, which is the certificate issued by the FAA, which allows an airline to operate commercial jet aircraft in passenger service. So that's really where we are today. We recently finished up a rather lengthy negotiation with Amadeus, and Amadeus, as you know, is the successor company to System One, which Eastern had started, and we will be using Amadeus as our platform for all of our IT and our distribution and all of our airport activities in terms of check-in and point of sale and so forth. So we're very happy to bring Amadeus back into the Eastern family, so to speak, and vice versa. And we literally have concluded those negotiations within the last few weeks, and now we're going into to more extensive discussions with them about other things that can be done in terms of some of the things that we think airlines ought to be doing. And we have a very proactive discussion with Amadeus about pushing customer service standards forward so that we can communicate better with the customer, both before they buy, after they buy the ticket, and then before they get to the airport. And then as well during the time that they're on their journey, to be able to communicate with them through social media and other means of communication so that we can solve problems and resolve issues for the customer quickly and without a lot of fuss. So we're very happy to have that relationship back in place. And we're pushing forward. So, Neil, with that, I'm not sure I've gone on too long, but certainly ready for comments or questions or critiques. So I leave the show back to you.
Well, a great update to all of us listening, and we do have several callers on the line. Any of our hosts have some calls? By the way, let me ask, the area code's 410-317 and 856. If you would like to get into the conversation with Ed, just press 1 on your telephone.
Neil, and, this is Jim. I have a question.
Jim, go ahead.
Ed, this is Jim Hart up here on Martha's Vineyard. So many of us have extensive experience in so many areas. Is there any way that you are going to be able to take advantage of our experience through any other means, any means at all?
Yes, we early on in the process, and Vito Borelli was really instrumental in putting this together for us. We put together, with Vito's help, a board of advisors made up of a number of retired Eastern employees and others who had been involved in Eastern in each of the various functional departments. And we've had a couple of meetings. We've gotten some good feedback, some thoughts and ideas. And I really want to expand that whole program so that, I'd like to put together a group of former pilots. I would like to put together a group of former flight attendants. I'd like to put together a group of people focused on sales and marketing. And we've been so busy trying to put together the plan and get through the hurdles that we haven't been able to focus really on that side of it. But Vito and I spoke the other day about rolling out that program so that we include more and more of our retirees and others who are interested in the new Eastern, get them involved in the process and get their best thoughts and ideas on things that we can do. So it's a good question, and it's something that's on our to-do list. And I'd love to talk to the host of this show as well to talk about some of the other areas where we've got retirees and see how we can get them involved. So I look very much forward to doing that.
Put my name on the list, please, Ed. Jim Hart, West Palm Beach.
Okay.
Well, I thought you were in Martha's Vineyard.
Well, I am. That's the wintertime, West Palm. I'm on Martha's Vineyard right now.
Well, I think maybe we should have the first meeting up in Martha's Vineyard.
Vito, well, Vito, would you like to add to the comments that Ed just said about?
I thought did a good explanation of what's going on. I know we do have an advisory group put together, and we've been very successful with it, with Ed. And I'm sure when the time comes, we'll be all ready to go ahead with the airline. So things have been working fine. So all his comments were, like I said, right up to date, and I'm sure he's doing a great job. So. Just hope that things will come about. One of these days, we'll have some kind of an announcement when he gets all his plan together. So, thanks again, Ed. You did a great job there.
Good, Vito.
Thanks, Vito. Yeah, your support has been very very instrumental in getting us to this point. So,
thank you. Right.
Now, Ed, don't leave. Ed. I think we've got some other callers. Ed.
Sure.
Bill?
Yeah. This is Chuck.
Oh, Chuck. Go
ahead. Can you hear me, Ed?
Yeah, sure can.
I'm a maintenance person, 43 years, Pan Am, and 20 years with Eastern. Worked your way up to middle management. Ran some shops in the engine shop, putting RB211s and stuff together. My question is, are you farming out your maintenance, and what kind of aircraft do you intend to use, and do you have any specifics on hangar facilities and things of that sort?
Yeah, we've done some extensive planning in that area. Our view right now is, in terms of aircraft, there's, and I think I explained this on the last, or talked about it on the last show that I was on. In the area that we want to operate, given the stage lengths and given the type of service that we want to provide, really came down to two aircraft types that we focused on. And one was a Boeing product, of course, the 737-800, and the other was the Airbus product, the Airbus A320. And given where we're operating and the other airlines that are operating there and the type of airplanes that they operate, and as well the type of airplane that our main or the main manufacturer of our main competitor in the hub that we're going to operate from, which is Miami, we have focused on the A320, and I will tell you that when we approached Airbus early on in this process and talked about using Airbus again, the reception that we got was absolutely phenomenal. In fact, the first meeting that we had with Airbus, they came in and put a picture of the first A300 that had been delivered to Eastern up on a big picture on the wall, and said, you know, we were very appreciative of the relationship with Eastern starting in the early 70s. It was as much good for Airbus as it was for Eastern. We're very appreciative of that. There's a very long memory in Toulouse where the airplanes are built of the support that Eastern gave, and in fact, Airbus has really bent over backwards helping us and supporting us in terms of analysis and other planning that we needed. So right now we're focused on the A320, more availability of that airplane than the 737. It fits well with the type of customers and in the regions that we're operating. Our philosophy on maintenance is fairly simple. We believe that the new Eastern in our area of operations is a 25 to 30 airplane fleet. Once we build out that fleet and show that we can operate in this region of the world and we're an effective and efficient partner of one of the alliances, then other opportunities will come our way to do things. But we're focused right now on a bite-size chunk of the business, which is 25 to 30 airplanes operating out of Miami. So our maintenance philosophy follows from that, which is we are talking to a number of organizations about effectively doing a nose-to-tail maintenance operation for us. Everything from the overnight check to the A check to all the way up to the overhaul. And what that allows us to do is drive the unit costs down because we go to each of these maintenance providers and we say to them, look, here's our plan. Here's how many airplanes we're going to start with. Here's our plan for adding airplanes. Here are the cities that we're going to operate to. We want to drive a block hour maintenance cost that we're going to hold the maintenance provider to. And, you know, it's based on what Airbus says is it costs to operate the airplane, maintenance costs. But it also incorporates all of the elements of maintenance that are required. So we can, what we need to be able to do is to accurately forecast what our maintenance costs are going to be. And the best way to do that is to have a third-party provider that comes in and does that for us on a contract basis, on a negotiated rate basis, that we hold them to that rate. Now, there's a bunch of factors that go into that. You got a new airplane, and so there's a warranty on the airplane for X number of cycles and hours flown, X number of years. And so all of those maintenance warranty costs are factored into that number. But what we want to drive, and whether it's maintenance or it's on the IT side with Amadeus or it's with some of the other providers that we're talking to, we are driving them in the negotiation down to, you know, what will it cost us per passenger, per block hour to operate? You know, what will you charge us? For instance, on the IT side, right, we're moving with Amadeus towards a system where all of the functions that are required in terms of technology, everything from the reservations system to the check-in to the kiosk, to the issuance of the boarding pass, all of those items come down to a per-passenger cost. And what we're driving each of the providers, the vendors, to is that per-passenger or per-block-hour cost. Because what we want to focus on, quite frankly, at the airline, is the other elements that make you successful, sales and marketing side, customer service side, and so forth. So all of those sort of back office, if you use that term for a moment, all of those back office aspects, we want to be in a position where we're driving a contractor or a vendor to as lowest cost, highest service level as possible, so that we can accurately predict our costs. We can lay those costs out for our investors and for Wall Street and others and say, we have locked in these costs. There is no possibility that we're going to go beyond this cost per block hour as we grow our fleet or as we grow our operation. So long-winded answer on the maintenance side, we're talking to a number of very, very large maintenance organizations about coming in, setting up in Miami, and providing Eastern with a nose-to-tail maintenance function that handles all of the functions that are required on the maintenance side. So I hope that answers your question.
Yes, very, very extensively. In fact, just a footnote here, that first airplane sat in back of the hangar for almost 6 months. Later on, I had been one of the people who were qualified to taxi airplanes. I got to taxi that plane. I worked on the airplane for years. It has a lot of redundancy systems in it. I think from a mechanic standpoint, the systems that they build into it, even though you might look at it and say, well, they took this from one manufacturer and this idea from another manufacturer, they came up with a great aircraft. So I think you're in the right direction as far as aircraft are concerned.
Well, I appreciate that.
Jan, I believe you indicated earlier you might have a question for Ed.
I did. Actually, and I do want to say, Mr. Weigel, you answered it very succinctly related to the business model, and I do appreciate that, and it's a very complex business, to say the least. Wow. I do have a question. In addition to the IT and maintenance, what other areas do you foresee as being outsourced?
Certainly, you know, we've looked at every department, every function, Those functions that touch the customer, the touch points, which are, as you know, critical within an airline, are those functions that we want to keep in-house. We want those people, those team members, to be on our payroll, under our control in terms of training and systems and procedures, because that's very important. All of those touch points, from the reservations to the, certainly, this is an archaic term because there are no tickets anymore, but the ticket counter function at the main hub to the gate agents at the main hub need to be our people. When you get below the wing and you get away from a touch point with the customer, that becomes less important. And so we're talking to, for instance, various vendors about providing all of the below-the-wing ground handling for us, not only in Miami, but through all of the outstations under a master contract, which, again, what we're trying to do is drive down costs as much as possible and give them or give the vendor the ability to lower their costs because they're providing more services to us. But in terms of, again, where we touch the customer, it's important that team member be an Eastern employee. So,
thank you very much.
Ed, I've got a question. You know, with gate space, how difficult is that now? And have you looked at different areas there? I know Miami would probably be your origination there, all your flights. Have you talked to the airports about gate space and how difficult is it to get a gate space?
Well, of course, obviously it depends on the airport. There are some airports where there's plenty of space. Miami, for instance, Miami International, as you know, American has moved to the North Terminal, which has effectively left concourses E and F largely empty during the day. I mean, they're essentially, except for some offline operations that come in, those gates are all available. There's certainly space times of the day on H, and then as you move over towards Concourse J, where Star Alliance is, it gets a little crowded. We don't want to be there. We intend to be mid-terminal, so E and F are probably where we'll end up. There's enough space for what we want to do. With 25, at full up, 25 airplanes are, and obviously airplanes are all over the system during the day, will originate most of the activity in the morning in Miami in the beginning, but as the system and the structure becomes more complex, then we'll have overnighting airplanes in lots of different areas. So our peak use of gates in Miami with 25 airplanes will probably be 8 gates, and that is there's certainly sufficient space at this point to provide that for us. And the airport will make more available as we need it. So, so we're not worried about Miami. And the other reason we're not really worried about Miami is the fact that, as you all probably know, Miami is a very high-cost airport to operate from, as opposed to a Fort Lauderdale or some of the other airports. So that has the effect of ensuring that some of the low-cost carriers, or even the ultra-low-cost carrier, stay out of Miami. But Miami is very, very attractive to us for a number of reasons, because obviously, we believe that it is the airport in South Florida that the traffic it prefers to go to, particularly the business traffic. And certainly if you're connecting onwards, you want to come into Miami. And the premium that we get because of the preferred airport and the fact that you've got the business traffic on that airplane means that your overall yield is higher, and so you can overcome that cost differential operating from Miami. So we view the higher cost operating in Miami as good for us because it keeps other competitors out and it ensures that we've got enough space to grow and establish our business. Now, if you look at other locations that we intend to operate, be it San Juan, Santo Domingo, throughout the Caribbean, in the high VFR traffic markets, there's plenty of gate space, and there'll be more space made available as you look through the region and the terminals and the gates and all of that are being renovated and expanded. In Latin America, it's obviously a case by case, city by city, country by country basis, but. Our plan calls for two round trips in these markets, and so the ability to get in and get out twice a day, in all cases we've looked at, we'll have sufficient gate space and the right slot times that we need in order to build out the plan. So at this point we're not concerned. Latin America is going through a boom in terms of traffic and in terms of the growth of the airlines. In fact, it's estimated that the Latin American region, which is South America, Central America, and Mexico, will need an additional 2,000 airplanes over the next 15 years. Some of those are to replace older aircraft, but most of that is new additional aircraft that are needed to fulfill the demand in Latin America. And just really amazing when you think of that number, 2,000 airplanes, which is literally the size of two American Airlines fleets, are needed to fulfill the demand in Latin America. So there's a big push on in Latin America in terms of infrastructure development of the airports and the roads to get to the airport, terminal space, runways, because they understand the boom is coming, and they need to be prepared for it. So. Like everywhere, there'll be places where we'll have a difficult time operating, or there'll be some difficulties or challenges. We'll overcome them, and there's some places where that won't be an issue at all. So,
just to be in the right timing, should something happen to American Airlines. As a matter of fact, today Yahoo reported brands that may not be with us in the near future, and it showed an American airplane. American Airlines, so to have it timed.
Hey, Neil?
Yes.
This is Bob Furman. I was wondering if I could give a little historical perspective to Ed, please.
Yes.
Hey, Ed, I'm Bob Furman. I was a pilot of Eastern 17 years and retired as a captain with Airborne Express. I put in 15 years up there.
Okay.
And you may or may not be aware, but we actually put a bill on the president's desk. You were talking about the legalisms of bankruptcy and through the 2000s. That bill was H.R. 1231, and it was passed in on or about in November of 1989. But what was beautiful about it is I was part of this with many other people. We took buses to Washington, D.C. We lobbied 93 senators with 500 people in 3 days. And when they heard our story, they voted for us. We passed cloture. We got a cloture vote, 61-38, which is unheard of. Totally grassroots input by American citizens in this government to have our voices heard. And our voices have never been truly heard, sir, as to what really happened with us. As one point, Eastern was indicted approximately a 42-count indictment of maintenance fraud, and they pled guilty to 7 counts. And we have licenses in our pockets to tell us we can't fly the airplanes if they're not doing maintenance. And when we got this story in front of our elected representatives, we actually put H.R. 1231 on President Bush's desk. And it was vetoed. It was for there to be 2 Democrats, 2 Republicans, simply to hear our voices in the First Amendment. Now, that's a historical perspective. I've loved Eastern and the people around it my entire aviation career. My wife was assistant manager of the flight attendant training school here in Atlanta for Eastern. and she's with a major airline right now and wrote the main standard operating procedures manual that the flight attendants carry for that airline. So we've been involved. But you might want to take a look at that historical perspective. And if you want to get a hold of me, it's Bob Furman, www.bobfurman.com, www.bobfurman.com. I think if you take a look at that and talk to a few of us, it might get you some political expedition in bringing Eastern back. And I appreciate you listening, Ed. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate it, Captain, and I look forward to talking to you.
Yes, sir.
Steve, Bill, do you have any questions?
This is Steve, Mr. Weigel. I appreciate your input, and it's been so thorough that it leaves me answering any questions that would come up. I would ask maybe if you're trying to raise $10 to get it off the ground, at what point are you in? And have you raised $5 or $7, or where are you along in this effort?
We've targeted to build out the plan to get to 25 operating airplanes from Miami. It's 25 A320s. We've penciled out the plan at a requirement for $150 million, and that's all equity. Airlines have typically started by raising a small amount of money, getting into the air, hoping that they can hang on long enough through ticket sales to get another airplane and another airplane and survive the competitive onslaught. We don't want to do that. When we bring Eastern back, it will be with a sufficient amount of capital such that we can focus on the plan, focus on customer service, focus on marketing and sales, and not focus or have to worry about that in 6 months or 9 months or a year that we've got another requirement to raise another amount of equity or debt or wherever we need to be in the capital formation. So we've targeted $150 million as the minimum amount that we want to have available to us before we launch. Now, that doesn't mean we can't go and we've made an offer which has been accepted for a small airline. Amongst the founder group, we've got the capital to acquire that airline, keep it operating as it is, and sort of keep it ready for when we need it for the operating certificate and to transform it. But before we go forward with the Eastern name, and I want to make sure everyone understands this, we will not do it unless we are sure that we have sufficient capital that we can do this in an absolute first-class manner. There is no way that we will try to bring the Eastern name back unless we are sure that we've got the money available to do it. And we are not. We have no interest in restarting Eastern and getting a year into it and running into difficulties and then going through the over the speed bumps and other problems that other airlines have. We will not do this, as I said, until we are sufficiently comfortable that we can build out to the 25 airplanes that we want in this fleet. And so of the $150 million, I will say that we're about two-thirds of the way there. We're actually now looking at some various options about raising the balance of that capital, and some of our institutional investors who are coming into the financing have actually asked us to look at bringing the airline back into the public market now in a variation of an initial public offering where we will self-list or relist Eastern shares on one of the exchanges. That was done in the case of Pan Am 2. That was a very successful financing technique. And from a historical perspective, we can make the case that Eastern was a publicly traded entity, a publicly traded company, almost until the very end, and of course it stopped being so. But it was publicly traded for many, many years, and we're bringing Eastern back as a publicly traded entity. But not to digress too far from your basic question is how far are we? We're about two-thirds of the way there. We're confident that we'll get the balance. It may come in as a publicly listed entity, or it may come with additional capital provided by some of our institutional investors. May come in the form of some guarantees or some other credits that we'll get, but we will not start. We will not put the name Eastern on any airplane until we've got sufficient capital, which again we've targeted at $150 million to get us, and that amount is needed to get us ramped up through the initial phases, through the initial first year, year and a half to 2 years, where no matter what you do, you lose money because you don't have sufficient number of airplanes to operate. Get through that period, get to profitability, and build out our plan. Because we just want to focus at the time that we start on the name and the marketing and the service, and ensuring that we're doing all we can to maximize the effectiveness that we have with our partners and our strategic alliances and so forth. So we're comfortable that we're going to get there. We certainly could start today. We don't want to do that because I don't want to be in a position where a year from now I've got to raise more capital. I don't know what's going to happen with this presidential election. I don't know what's going to happen in Europe. I don't know what's going to happen with Greece and some other things around the world. So we're not going to start until we've got the capital committed to us, and I don't have to try to forecast what's going to happen in the future at a future date when I've got to try to raise more capital. I don't want to do that. I want to raise it today. So,
thank you, sir.
Well, you certainly have the support of organizations, the Eastern organizations such as EARA, the Retired Eastern Pilots Association, the Silverliners, and yours truly, this radio show. At any time, we can help to promote even with investments. So that kind of interests me. I'd like to buy stock today in it because of what you have explained so thoroughly tonight, Ed. I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate the venue and to be able to get our message out. The equity that is in the name, I'll just say that I strongly force myself, and I force others in this project not to use the word brand. I hate the word brand.
Mm-hmm.
Eastern was a living, breathing airline, brands are easy to create. An airline like Eastern, which operated for 60 years, is not a brand. Eastern was an airline. People fly airlines. They don't fly brands. And so I tell all of our people, and I tell our the ad agencies that we talk to and the marketing agencies and the public relations firms that we're talking to, I said, don't ever use the word brand with me because Eastern is not a brand. Eastern is a way of life. It's a culture. It's a lot of thousands and thousands of people who worked at Eastern who created a very, very special place. You know, you can create a brand in 30 minutes. Eastern took 60 years to create what was a really phenomenal airline. And so when we bring Eastern back, we are going to, you know, we want to bring back that way of thinking, the culture, the hard work ethic, and all those things that made Eastern great. So being able to tap into all of your various organizations for ideas and support and the other things that we could use, is very critical for us because at the end of the day, our ability to make the new Eastern successful is, we're going to stand on the shoulders of all of you who came before us. And so we need to recognize that, we need to honor that, and we need to ensure that you're as much as part of the process as you want to be and that we can bring you into that process because that, you know, that in, you know, that's what made the first Eastern great, and that's what will make the second Eastern almost as great. So appreciate all your efforts on our behalf, and we certainly appreciate this the audience to get our message out.
Thank you so much, Ed. And we certainly appreciate your time, and we hope that you can come back and talk with us again, especially when there's more news. And it sounds like you guys are really getting closer to getting this thing into the air and a lot of folks happy.
Well, I appreciate that. And we'd love to come back on, and I'll keep in touch with you and let you know what we're doing. Certainly Vito is up to speed all the time on what we're doing. He's been a great advisor and mentor towards our team. So we'll stay in touch, and we'll plan on coming back on hopefully soon.
Very good. Thank you so much. Any other questions from our host or our listeners?
Yeah, I want to say thank you, Ed, for such a wonderful explanation of what's happening, and I'm sure that's going to answer a lot of questions that I've been asked. And you're doing a great job, and all I'd say is you're going to get a 100% support from all of us at Reaper, the flight attendants, and captains, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
You've got all of our support, Ed, so go to it, baby.
Absolutely.
God bless you.
Absolutely.
Got it, Vito. Thanks so much.
Okay, buddy.
Well, I hear our sign-off music in the background. Steve, how about putting this episode 71 in the archive for us?
Okay. Glad to do it, Neil. And ladies and gentlemen, we have enjoyed being with you this evening. And we hope in our future shows that you will be a part of these. You've heard a lot of yakking by our host, but we'd like to hear from you. Tell us what you think about our shows, be it good or bad, and how we might improve our broadcast. Who you think would be a good guest interview, and just anything that you might want to talk about. We know many people are taking vacations this time of the year, but wherever you are, if you have a computer, you can listen to our shows, or even just a telephone. Maybe you'll want to tell us how your interline pass travel went also. Please plan to be with us next week for episode 72, when we hope to have a special guest lined up. Now, from all of our hosts at the EAL Radio Show, we say
good night,
Eastern people.
Okay, buddy. Okay.
Thanks a lot. Good night.
Night, Vito.
Good night, buddy. Nice talking to you. I think we did a good job tonight. Thank you, Dee.
It was good.
And a prayer that every dream comes true.